To better your best and your world, you need to dig deep and grow. Join us as top experts, leaders, and creators uncover powerful insights to help you grow in life and in work. And now, your host, Michael McAvoy. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Dig Deep Grow, the show dedicated to helping you better your best and your world. I'm Michael McAvoy, your host, and today we're going to be talking about sustaining your business growth. A lot of businesses get started, but as you know, the statistics are not too pleasant for the longer term. So we have a guest with us, James Fisher, today. James has experience for over 30 years consulting with businesses of all sizes, and his company is called the Growth Curve Institute. We'll be discussing the ideas from his book called Navigating the Growth Curve today. So, with that, I'd like to introduce James. James, thanks for joining me today.
It's my pleasure, Michael. Great to be here.
Fantastic. So, first, I'd like to ask if you could just give a background. What was, going back to the beginning of your consulting career, it's the same thing, I'm sure, that drives you today, that you have a passion there. And I just want you to talk a little about your background, what got you excited working in the business arena.
Well, Michael, I came from an entrepreneurial family, and my dad ran a three-generation-old aluminum bronze castings foundry back in New Jersey. And so I had the good fortune to sort of get the whole how to run a business and what business is all about from day one. And over the years, I've had six businesses, so I have been in the trenches dealing with a lot of what most business owners deal with. Over the last 30 years, I've had the opportunity to work with over 1,000 CEOs and their companies, and have had a chance to really understand what it is that drives growth and how to manage it. And I guess I have my real passion for this is that there's an incredible potential that I have observed in the small business arena. And when I say small business, Mike, I'm talking about anything from, two or three employee business up to, say, 500 employees. And in that arena, there's an enormous opportunity to tap the genius of the human being working in that arena, and I've seen it happen, and the results are remarkable. It's not necessarily, doesn't happen that often, but when it does happen, it is really incredible to see. So that's what gets me going out of, gets me out of bed every morning, is that potential and actually having it be realized in small businesses today.
Well, having personally been through your program, I've seen the results that you speak of, so it's a pleasure that you can join me today. So your system addresses everything really from startup to growing the business and sustaining it, most importantly. So the first question I'll ask is, since a lot of our listeners are entrepreneurs, could you talk to the biggest challenge that faces small business in today's environment? So over the past 10 years especially, there's been immense changes in how businesses operate. And frankly, there's a lot more quick failure because of the rapid changing environment. So what's your thought there?
Well, Michael, I would say, based on the work that I've done over the years, and yes, this environment is certainly different than it was 10 years ago. I would say that the primary component for any entrepreneur or business owner is that they have to have an open mind, and they have to be willing to change. Those two things, they have to have an open mind and they have to be willing to change, are the critical factors that essentially keep a business alive and keep it moving down the road. And what I have found is you can be willing to change and not have an open mind. And that doesn't work. Or you can have an open mind but not be willing to change. Those two on their own don't really cut it. You got to have both together.
Okay, so that's an interesting answer, because it's not you weren't talking about tactics or, you know, change this or that. It was really a fundamental idea about how you approach the world. So what's the failures that you see, speaking to the exact same point that you mentioned?
Yeah.
Lack of an open mind, what does that lead to, and why is it so important now?
Okay, so here's the thing, Michael. You know, I and this is pretty basic, and I talk about this in my programs and with our clients. There's a fundamental sort of precept here, and that is based on there's two things that we see in business. There's we think about our business and we do our business. And I think most entrepreneurs and business owners are pretty convinced that the doing part is really where they make their money. And I'm going to sort of posit an idea to you here. It might be a little radical to most of your listeners, but you don't make money doing. You make money thinking. And then you do what you think. And how you think determines how successful your company is going to be. And so we put a fair amount of time on getting our business owner clients and members to in our SGL program to try to be open enough to rewire their thinking on how they think about their business, because how they think about their business is going to drive how they do their business. I mean, it sounds kind of simplistic, but it's really true. And the structure of their thinking, i.e. through their business model initially, is huge. And go back to your original question, is that once you have an open mind and you're willing to change, then you have to go into your business model and say, what is it about, what are my assumptions about my business model? And everyone has one, Michael. They may not have a structured way of thinking about it, but if in your business you have a business model, you've sort of organized, certain things together to go out and sell a certain number of offerings, and you have a business model, it may not be well thought out. It may not be really, going through a process that really has forced you to vet your assumptions, because our assumptions obviously drive our decisions, and our decisions obviously, are the cause of our success and failure or failure. So, again, I would say that when we look at a business and we say, okay, I want to improve my business, and my business is essentially being generated by my assumptions and thinking about that business. And I need to be open-minded to be able to take on new ideas and new considerations, and then I got to be willing to change the way I do things. And so that's really critical.
Okay, is thinking different from planning? Like, I want to understand if this is a more of a philosophical approach to life, or whether we're talking about, sitting down and planning out the next year or 3 months or what for each part of your business. Talk about the distinction between thinking and doing.
Okay, so that's a great question. I think what I'm talking about now with regard to the business model isn't so much planning as it's modeling. It's testing different assumptions and trying them out and seeing how they affect the whole system. And if you're fortunate to have a tool that allows you to do that, you are able to, before you make a decision and allocate resources in any manner through various, avenues, you're able to really say, let's test this and let's see how it could possibly will affect everything else in the business. And so that's really an important part of the thinking process. That's the first part. Planning, based on that modeling, and let's say you've got to a point where you're really pretty confident that your model's going down the right road, then you put in place a plan to actually set goals and strategies and that kind of thing to move forward into a tactical, get it done execution mode.
Okay. So you do have a set of tools that you use in your program.
Yes.
One of the basic tools is your book called Navigating the Growth Curve. Uh-huh. And you have graciously offered to give away copies of your book to our listeners and viewers. So I'll just mention that we will put a link up both on our post for this and also on the podcast. So you can find the link there. And just follow the link, and I believe there's a form that you fill out to get the book, but that's all you have to do. All right. So,
All right.
So let's. I'm going to ask you to put your crystal ball on. Now we've talked a little about thinking and planning. If you project out 10 years from today, the environment that we have, the way that doing business is changing. What will the winners and losers in business look like? And what are the reasons that they will have ended up that way?
Well, let me qualify your statement. Let's just say the winners are people who have a sustainable business.
Correct.
And that aren't just sort of, you know, doing a rocket ship up and then 2 years later it's down on its knees.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sustainable model. You know, in 10 years, I mean, looking, as you say, in the crystal ball, based on my understanding of human behavior and also the economy and what's happening with technology, things are really changing pretty rapidly. And I think there's, you know, essentially a couple criteria that a company has to have to be able to survive and do well over the next 10 years. And they sort of go to... something that I use and I call it. It's called a fortress system. And in that fortress system, there are three things. There are what I call the charter of your company. It's like the engine in your company, Michael. And they're made up of your vision, mission, your core values, what stage of growth you're in, and what degree of the rules for that stage of growth that you've completed, and stage of growth is determined by the number of employees, and we can certainly get into that later, and then also your profit design. So that those four things make up, if you can imagine this, you can imagine a Roman fort, and there's four towers around, and each tower is named by these four things, core values, vision, mission, profit design, and stage of growth. And then inside the walls of that fortress, you're going to see critical elements that address the value that you are transferring to the customer, frankly, and the customer and how you deal with the customer, and then the structure of your company and how that structure helps you deliver the value. And then last but not least is the revenue design. So how is your revenue mix going to actually go out to the customer? Okay, what kind of revenue mix are you going to really use? And those four things inside the walls that's called the business model thinking, and that interacts with the charter elements on the outside and the towers. Now, this sounds kind of complicated over the radio like this, but what I'm trying to do is paint a picture, is that you have to have both of those things going. You got to have the engine, and then you have to have the thinking. And I believe that, personally, I believe that the companies that are going to be really successful, whether they're internet companies or whether they're brick-and-mortar companies, we're going to need both, obviously. And there always will be both. And the key thing here is that a successful company is going to have to understand the human formula in your organization. They're going to have to move out of the thinking that their employees or their staff are sort of there to be robots just to do a job and get paid and go home. They're going to have to be able to compete. The companies in the future are going to have to tap the genius of their staff, and that is a major shift, I think, for a lot of entrepreneurial leaders, is to begin to understand much better the complexity of their organization, realize the importance, the core values in the organization, what they, you know, the core values have an enormous impact on the behavior and performance of the staff in a company, and frankly, on the leadership as well. And I think when the company begins to present itself that the core values are the top tier of the leadership in the company, as opposed to the CEO and the executive, when the core values drive decisions in the company, that's when you start to see remarkable results. And I think there is a wave that I don't want to call it a trend because I don't think it is a trend. There's a fundamental wave of change coming with companies realizing that to evolve and to step into the next phase of, you know, business demonstration, it's going to, that those companies are going to have to have, they're going to have to be driven by core values from the bottom, from the janitor up to the top. So in answer to your question, I'm seeing that the company has to have a certain formula. It doesn't matter what industry is it in. It really doesn't matter. They have to have an organized way that they think about their business, that they execute their business, and that they have that engine that keeps the rudder going in the right direction, i.e. the vision has to be very clear and compelling. The mission has to be very simple and easy to understand, straightforward. This is what we do. That's the mission.
Mm-hmm.
And the stage of growth, there are rules for every stage of growth that a company goes through, and the CEO and the management team, they have to make sure that they're completing those simple rules before they go to the next stage of growth, because that kind of keeps them out of trouble. And last but not least, they have to have a profit design, a sort of a underlying blueprint for how they're going to make money. And that's part of the, it's one of the elements inside the business model as well. So I cut a roundabout answer, and maybe you were looking for a simpler formula, but I don't know if there is a simple formula, Michael.
Okay.
If, you know, from my viewpoint, I think that's what it's going to really take.
Get this podcast delivered to you automatically. You can subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and more. You'll find the links here or on our website, digdeepgrow.com. Okay, so let's go back to the small business owner. Many of these owners wear many hats, if not all of the hats in the business. Can a business succeed without building a team of some kind? For a solopreneur, would you suggest that there would be a most important person to bring on when you have that ability?
You know, Michael, this is a good question, because there's a lot of solopreneurs out there. And, you know, in many respects, they're working for themselves, obviously. And what I think what's really important, and I had, it was interesting, I had a discussion with Kurt Richardson, who's the chairman of the board of OtterBox up in Fort Collins, and has been extraordinarily successful. And I had a discussion, just a chat with him the other day, or actually a couple of weeks ago. And he just reiterated a point that he said that was extraordinarily important to him and extraordinarily important to all the businesses that he's encountered in his career. And that is, the individual business owner has to get very clear about what they want. And they have to get their personal vision down for their life. And then they go and look at their company's or their business's vision. And they have to make sure that that business's vision matches or supports their personal life vision. And this may not be going quite down the road that you necessarily maybe intended, but I think any business owner has to do that. And then what happens is, then you have to say, okay, well, does my business vision support my personal vision? And if your personal vision is to travel a lot and you know, just do it and run your business on the road, having employees might be kind of tough.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to design your business around, you know, what you want your life to be. Now, the next step is that if in picking the people that start to come into your business to help you grow your business, in the very beginning, it's really important that you consider fit first and competency second, because you have, in many respects, a small barrel of apples, and any one apple can kind of spoil the whole barrel. So you want to be sure that the individual's core values and their personality style is complementary to yours. That's major important. And obviously, secondary is you want them to be competent, but you don't want to hire a really competent person that doesn't fit, because that can really cause a lot of problems. And as you grow your company further into, you know, deeper and deeper stages of growth, and you get to stage 2, which is 11 to 19 employees, stage 3, which is 20 to 34, and on up to stage 7, it becomes less important that that employee have a perfect fit, and more important they're really competent.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I don't know if that
answers
your question.
Yeah, that's helpful. You've mentioned a couple of answers. Number one, about the core passion or motivation mm-hmm. behind a business, as well mm-hmm. as a personal vision. So what I'm hearing is that, you know, more than anything else, more than the gears and everything else that run the business, the philosophy of the owner really is what's going to drive a successful business if it's aligned with that, and maybe it might lead to failure if there's a disconnect. Is that your take?
That's totally correct. I think, and candidly, I've had my own experience with this with the various businesses that I've owned, and I've seen other people, is that if you're just in business, and I'm going to be, I have to be really careful about this, if you're just in business to make a load of money and then get out, that certainly is a formula some people that works for. I haven't seen it work for all that many, frankly. A very small percentage that actually works for them, and they just happen to be walking across the bridge at the right time, and they hit the numbers. I think the people who are most likely listening to you right now, I think what would benefit them is to be very, very, very candid with themselves to make sure that, yes, what they want their life to be is part of their, obviously, their passion. And that passion may get expressed in business and may get expressed in some other profession or whatever. The point is that the tail can't wag the dog, so to mm-hmm. speak. The business has to serve the individual. And that's hard. It's particularly in the first couple of years when you're just trying to get a business off the ground. It takes so much energy and attention and time that one would start to think, is this really serving my life vision?
Right.
And there's a lot of sacrifices that go on there. And typically in the very beginning, you kind of have to do that. That's sort of like the requirements. So you have to kind of balance that out a little bit, knowing full well that you're building this thing to fulfill, certain life perspective.
Okay. All right. Today I'm talking with James Fisher, and his book is called Navigating the Growth Curve. There is a link for a free download that James is offering on the book. You'll see it in our posts and on the podcast as well. So look for that. And I believe it is a limited time link. So if you're listening to this, head over and don't miss that. I'd like to ask a question on your book, if I could, James, mm-hmm. about the strategies presented in the book. Now, there's a lot of material in there. I did want to ask if you could identify one strategy or idea that, if acted upon, would provide the most dramatic odds of success for a business. Like, in other words, if you were to point to one thing, they would say, look, if you're going to focus on one thing, this is it.
Well, I would say that, and Michael, I know you're aware of this. Sort of one of the unique perspectives about our system is that we look at companies based on the complexity of the company, and the complexity of the company is really determined by how many human beings are in the company. So, Michael, if we think about this, and we say, if you hire just a fantastic person. And they have everything you could possibly want. They bring a great spirit, a great attitude, terrific competencies, and they're a hard worker and the whole bit. Well, when they walk into your company, they carry a suitcase in their right hand, which is filled with all their positive attributes. And in their left hand, they're carrying a suitcase that has some of the things that they're challenged by. Everybody has challenges. And it could be, you know, their kids or their home life, or it could be their health is a little squirrely, or something going on, you know, and they walk in to work with those two suitcases. And what happens is that when you hire the next person, who's fantastic also, and then the next person and the next person, they all bring in their two suitcases. And they start to, you know, rub against each other. And doesn't matter how great the employee is, what'll happen is everyone brings in their pluses and minuses in the business, and they start to clump together. And when they clump together, they cause an outcome of that is it starts to get a little chaotic. And so what happens with every stage of growth that a business goes through is as it gets more and more employees, it gets more complex.
Mm-hmm.
And the behavior and performance of a group of human beings in one size group is a lot different than it is in another size group. And so what's required of leadership in each of these different size groups is pretty dramatically different. So I don't think there is any one sort of thing that any business owner, you know, in all sizes of business, there's any one recommendation I would make, short of really understanding what, first of all, I think there's two things, actually. There's two things. A business owner absolutely has to understand and increase their awareness of how they affect their organization, whether it's one employee or 50. And number two, they have to understand and increase their awareness of what their organization needs from them as their leader. And in every stage of growth, there's a different requirements. And I think that's one of the things that you were attracted to initially, Michael, when you first encountered our work, is that we just didn't look at all businesses the same. Problem with a lot of business books out there, the business books are doing sort of a universal formula for all business, and what I found is that's just not true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are small businesses, you're reading a book that's great for Fortune 500 companies, but it doesn't relate to your issues on a day-to-day basis. So one of the things that we have to do as business owners is to begin to understand that as we grow our company, we are going to have to change in order to serve that company in its growth.
Mm-hmm.
And the requirements are different for each stage of growth. And just as a real quick recap, stage one is 1 to 10 employees. And then right at that 10th employee, drop into that 11th employee. Something happens, Michael. It's bizarre. But all of a sudden, everything changes. The rules change. And if you sort of go through this chaotic zone, like a transition zone.
Yep.
And there's a transition zone, a chaos zone between each stage of growth. So when you go into stage two, which is 11 to 19 employees, you have a new set of rules. When you go through, you're from 19 to 20 employees, you jump into stage three. Stage three, there's 20 to 34 employees. Again, all new rules, different requirements of a leader, everything. And as you start moving up, your company gets so complex that you need to be adding more and more infrastructure, more and more processes. And that's sort of the stair-stepping approach to how to manage and navigate growth in a company that's expanding.
Yeah, I think that what your answer here dovetails very nicely with your first one, which was about open-mindedness. So, you know, your work lays out a path of growth, which is around the idea of the number of employees or people in your organization, and that if the owner can see the lay of the land, in other words, if he knows, hey, I'm adding 4 people, I know there's going to be chaos and I'm prepared for it, versus a lot of times it's just like they feel like it's coming out of left field, and there's the chaos leads to sometimes destruction of a business rather than just kind of understanding where they are in the growth cycle. Does that make sense?
That's totally, totally true. And, you know, like I've said many times, it's like even going from stage one to stage two, you go and you're going through a transition zone, which is called a flood zone. It means where there's so much work to do and you don't have enough people, so the first thing you do is add people. And so you add that 11th person, 12th person, 13th person. And you don't really get the relief you're looking for, because what you've added is complexity and you haven't really prepared for that. And so that's really true, Michael. The way we look at companies is that if you understand what, you know, our premise here, you can actually predict what's coming down the road by mm-hmm. adding people.
Okay. All right. We have time for one more question, James, and I'm going to ask you to address a question for the young folks in the audience, people just coming out of college. So if you, for instance, had a relative, a niece or nephew or something that was coming out of college and asking for advice, what would you say to them about the choice of going to work for a corporation versus starting their own business right out of the gate? And why would you, why do you believe that?
Well, I think it goes back to what I originally kind of talked about, is that they really have to know what they want. And if it's really a function of their risk tolerance. And many entrepreneurs and business owners are much more tolerant to taking risks and taking chances than folks who are working in a larger organization. They have a different framework. They have a different, you know, personality makeup, and they would be better served working for a company than owning or running a company. And I think, you know, pluses in both sides. And I think it's really a function of knowing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do decide that, if someone does, if a young person does decide that they want to have their own business, again, I would go back to a fundamental premise, is that very often entrepreneurs, just by the sake of the world that they live in, they have to be definitely determined. They have to have a lot of persistence. And what goes along with that persistence at times can be closed-mindedness.
Mm-hmm.
And because they just have to stay on course and not change and not look all over the place, right? So
right. There's
a really unique blend. And I think talking with a young person in their 20s and just getting out of college and they want to, you know, have their own company, run their own company, there is a fundamental platform or foundation that they need to put down. And that platform is going in and seeking the knowledge about business from other people who have been in business. They need to get themselves in some kind of peer group or whatever so that they can accelerate their learning curve so that they can be successful. It's pretty tough on your first business to be successful, really successful, without getting some help from the outside.
Yeah, I think that I agree with you there that especially for a first-time business, a lot of times it's bootstrapping and maybe not consulting the people who they could for their business. But, I mean, I think the whole idea of mentorship and being with a group of your peers is only going to help accelerate your success instead of the rocky road of doing it all by yourself. So,
I would agree.
Yeah. So anyway, with that, James, I'd like to thank you for joining me today. The book is called Navigating the Growth Curve. Again, there's a copy. You can get a copy for a limited time. Visit the link on our post or on our podcast. And James, I appreciate your visiting with us today.
Great. Thanks. Thanks so much, Michael. And just as a reiteration, our website is sustainablebusinessgrowth.com. So everyone's welcome to go in and check it out.
Great. Thanks for your time, James.
All right. Thank you.